Caliph Rassi of Baghdad was once sitting comfortably on his sofa one fine afternoon. He had slept a little, for it was a hot day, and now he looked quite cheerful after his nap. He smoked a long rosewood pipe, drank a little coffee now and then, which a slave poured for him, and stroked his beard with pleasure every now and then when he had enjoyed it. In short, one could see that the Caliph was quite happy. At this hour one could talk to him very well, because he was always very mild and sociable. That is why his Grand Vizier visited him every day at this time. That afternoon he came too, but he looked very thoughtful, quite contrary to his usual habit. The Caliph put his pipe out of his mouth a little and said, "Why do you look so thoughtful, Grand Vizier?" The Grand Vizier crossed his arms in a white cross over his chest, bowed to his master and replied, "Sir, I do not know whether I look thoughtful, but down there at the castle stands a grocer. He has such beautiful things that it annoys me not to have much spare money." Quote. The Caliph, who had long wanted to please his Grand Vizier, sent his black slave down to fetch the grocer. Soon the slave returned with the grocer. The latter was a short, fat man with a dark brown face and a tattered suit. He was carrying a chest in which he had all sorts of goods. Pearls and rings, richly studded pistols, goblets and chests. The Caliph and his vizier examined everything and the Caliph finally bought beautiful pistols for himself and Mansur, and a chest for the vizier's wife. As the grocer was about to close his chest again, the Caliph saw a small drawer and asked if there were any more goods in there. Kramer pulled out the drawer and showed a box with dark powder and a piece of paper with strange writing that neither the Caliph nor Mansur could read. "I once received these two pieces from a merchant who found them on the street in Mecca," said the grocer. "I do not know what they contain. They are at your service for a small price. I cannot do anything with them yet." Quote. The Caliph, who liked to have old manuscripts in his library, even if he could not read them, bought the writing and the box and dismissed the grocer. The Caliph, however, thought he would like to know what the writing contained and asked the vizier if he knew anyone who could decipher it. "Most gracious lord and master," he replied, "there lives a man at the great mosque. His name is Selim, the learned man, who understands all languages. Let him come. Perhaps he knows these mysterious features." Quote. The learned Selim was soon summoned. "Selim," the Caliph said to him. "Selim, they say you are very learned. Take a look at this writing and see if you can read it. Can you read it? Then you will receive a new festive robe from me. If you can't, then you will receive 12 slaps on the cheek and 25 on the soles of your feet, because then you will be called Selim the learned for nothing." Quote. Selim bowed and said, "Thy will be done, O Lord." He looked at the writing for a long time. But suddenly he exclaimed, "This is Latin, O Lord, or I will be hanged." "Say what it says," the Caliph commanded, "if it is in Latin." Selim began to translate, quote, "Man, whoever finds this, praise Allah for his mercy. Whoever sniffs the powder in this box and says mutabor while doing so can transform himself into any animal and also understand the language of animals. If he wants to return to his human form, he should bow 3 times to the east and say that word, but be careful not to laugh when you are transformed. Otherwise, the magic word will disappear completely from your memory and you will remain an animal." When Selim the scholar had read it, the Caliph was extremely pleased. He made the scholar swear not to tell anyone about the secret, gave him a beautiful dress and dismissed him. But to his grandson he said, "That's what I call a good purchase, man. So how happy I am until I am an animal. Tomorrow morning you will come to me." We then went together into the field, sniffed a little from my box, and then listened to what was being said in the air and in the water, in the forest and in the fields. The next morning, Caliph Rassid had hardly had breakfast and dressed when the Grand Master appeared to accompany him on his walk as he had ordered. The Caliph put the box with the magic powder in his belt and, after ordering his entourage to stay behind, he set off alone with the Grand Master. At first they walked through the caliph's extensive gardens, but searched in vain for any living creatures to try out their trick. The grandmaster finally suggested that they go further out to a pond, where he had often seen many animals, especially storks, which had always attracted his attention with their gravitational behavior and clattering. The caliph accepted the suggestion of his entourage and went with him towards the pond. When they arrived there, they saw a stork, pacing back and forth earnestly, searching for frogs and rattling something here and there. At the same time, they also saw another stork floating far up in the air towards that area. Quote, "I bet, my beard, most dignified sir," said the Grand Vizier, "that if I were to make these two long-legged creatures have a pleasant conversation with each other, how would it be if we became storks?" "Well said," replied the caliph. "But first, let us consider once more how one becomes human again." "That's right, walk three times, incline to the east, and say to Mutabor, 'So I am caliph again, and you, vizier. But for heaven's sake, don't laugh, or we'll be lost.'" While the caliph was thus speaking, he saw the other stork hovering above their heads and slowly lowering itself to the ground. He quickly pulled the snuffbox from his belt, took a good pinch, offered it to the grand vizier, who was also taking a sniff, and they both cried, "Mutabor!" Then their legs shrank and became thin and red. The beautiful yellow slippers of the caliph and his companion became misshapen stork feet. The arms became wings, the neck at the armpits and was a cubit long. The beard had disappeared and the body was covered with soft feathers. Quote, "You have a pretty beak, Mr. Grand Four," said the caliph after a long astonishment. "By the beard of the Prophet, I have never seen anything like it in my life." "Thank you, my lord," replied the Grand Four, stooping down. "But if I may venture to say so, I would like to say that your highness looks even prettier with stork legs than as the caliph. But come, if it pleases you, let us eavesdrop on our comrades there and find out whether we can really get through." In the meantime, the other stork had reached the ground. He cleaned his feet with his beak, arranged his feathers and went towards the first stork. The two new storks hurried to approach them and, to their astonishment, overheard the following conversation. "Good morning, Mrs. Longlegs. So early in the meadow already?" "Thank you very much, dear Shortbeak. I just got myself a small breakfast." "Would you like a ready-made idex or a frog's leg?" "Thank you, yours truly. I have no appetite today. I have come to the meadow for something completely different. I am supposed to dance in front of my father's guests today and I want to practice a little in silence." At the same time, the young stork strode through the field in a strange movement. The caliph and Mansur watched her in amazement, but when she stood in a picturesque position on one foot and gracefully flapped her wings, the two could no longer contain themselves. An unstoppable laughter burst from their beaks, from which they only recovered after a long time. Kali was the first to regain his composure. Quote, "That was a joke," he cried, "which cannot be bought with gold." Too bad the animals were scared away by our laughter, otherwise they would certainly have sung as well. But now the Grand Four remembered that laughing was forbidden during the transformation. He shared his fear of this with the caliph. "Holy Moaning and Medina, it would be a bad joke if I had to remain a stork. Just think of the stupid word, I can't get it out. We have to bend down three times to the east and say it. Mew, mew, mew." They turned to the east and kept bending down until their beaks and legs touched the ground. But oh, pity, the magic word had escaped them. And no matter how often the caliph bent down, no matter how eagerly his vizier called out Mew, every memory of it had vanished and poor Hasid and his vizier were and remained storks. The enchanted ones wandered sadly through the fields. They did not know what to do in their misery. They could not get out of their stork skin. Nor could they return to the city to reveal themselves, for who would have believed a stork to be the caliph? And if they had believed it, the inhabitants of Baghdad would have wanted a stork to be the caliph. So they wandered around for several days, subsisting meagerly on crops, which they could not eat well because of their long beaks. Incidentally, they had no appetite for lizards or frogs, for they feared that such delicacies would upset their stomachs. Their only pleasure in this sad situation was that they could fly. And so they often flew to the roofs of Baghdad to see what was going on. In the first few days, they noticed great unrest and sadness in the streets, but about the fourth day after their enchantment, they were sitting on the Caliph's palace. Then they saw a magnificent procession down the street. Drums and pipes sounded. A man in a scarlet cloak trimmed with gold sat on a decorated horse, surrounded by shining servants. Half of Baghdad sprang after him and everyone cried, "Ha Misra, the ruler of Baghdad." Then the two storks on the roof of the palace looked at each other and Caliph Rasid said, "Have you now told me why I am bewitched? Grand Vizier, this Misra is the son of my mortal enemy, the mighty magician Kishore, who swore revenge on me in an evil hour. But I have not yet given up hope. Come with me, you faithful companion of my misery. We will walk to the tomb of the Prophet. Perhaps the spell will be broken on the holy cities." They rose from the roof of the palace and flew towards the region of Medina. But flying did not go well at all, for the two storks had little practice yet. "Oh Lord! After a few hours of greetings, I can't stand it much longer with your permission. You're flying too fast. Besides, it's already evening and we'd better find somewhere to stay for the night." Hasid listened to his servant's request and, seeing a ruin down in the valley that seemed to offer shelter, they flew there. The place where they had settled for the night seemed to have once been a castle. Beautiful columns protruded from the ruins. Several chambers, which were still fairly well preserved, testified to the former splendor of the house. Rasid and his companion walked through the corridors looking for a dry spot. Suddenly the Sturch Manor stopped, quote, "Sir and Master," he whispered softly. "If only it weren't foolish for a great four, and even more so for a stork, to be afraid of ghosts." I felt quite uneasy, because here next to me there was quite audible sighing and groaning. The Caliph now also stopped and heard a soft whimpering so distinctly that it seemed to belong to a human being rather than an animal. Full of expectation, he wanted to go to where the wailing sounds were coming from. But the vizier seized him by the wing with its beak and begged him not to rush into new, unknown dangers. But in vain, the Caliph, who also had a brave heart beating under the stork's wing, tore himself free, losing a few feathers, and hurried into a dark corridor. Soon he had reached a door that seemed to be only ajar and from which he could clearly see sighs and hear a little howling. He pushed the door open with his beak, but stood surprised on the threshold. In the dilapidated chamber, which was only dimly lit by a small lattice window, he saw a large night owl sitting on the ground. Big tears rolled from its large round eyes and in a hoarse voice it uttered its lamentations through its crooked beak. But when it caught sight of the Caliph and his vizier, which had also crept up to it, it gave a loud cry of joy. It daintily wiped the tears from its eyes with its brown spotted wing and to the great astonishment of the two it called out in good human Arabic, "Welcome, you storks. You are my good sign of my deliverance, for through storks I will have great happiness. One thing has been prophesied to me," quote. When the Caliph had recovered from his astonishment, he bent down with his long neck, brought his thin feet into a graceful position and said, "Night owl, from what you said I may believe that I see in you a companion in suffering. But alas, your hope that your deliverance will come through us is in vain. You will realize our helplessness when you hear our story." Quote. The night owl asked him to tell it, which the Caliph did at once. When the Caliph had told the owl his story, she thanked him and said, "Listen to my story too and hear how I am no less unhappy than you. My father is the king of India. I, his only unhappy daughter, am called Lusa. That magician Kashua, who bewitched you, has also brought misfortune upon me. One day he came to my father and asked me to marry his son Misra. But my father, who is a hot-tempered man, had him thrown down the stairs. The wretch managed to sneak back near me under another guise, and when I once wanted to take refreshment in my garden, he disguised himself as a slave and brought me a potion which transformed me into this hideous figure. Fainting with terror, he brought me here and cried in my ears with a terrible voice, "You shall remain there, ugly, despised even by the animals until your end, or until someone of his own free will desires you in this horrible form as his wife. Then I will take revenge on you and your proud father." Many months have passed since then. I live lonely and sad as a hermit within these walls. Detested by the world, an abomination even to the animals. The beautiful nature is hidden from me, for I am blind by day. And only when the moon pours its pale light over these walls does the concealing veil fall before my eyes. The owl had changed its mind and was wiping its eyes with its wing again, for the story of its sufferings had brought tears to its eyes. The caliph had sunk into deep thought as the princess told her story. Quote, "If I am not mistaken," he said, "there is a secret connection between our misfortunes, but where can I find the key to this riddle?" The owl answered him, "Oh sir, I too suspect this, for once in my earliest youth a wise woman prophesied to me that a stork would bring me great happiness and that I might know how we could save ourselves." The caliph was very astonished and asked her what path she meant. "The magician who has made us both unhappy," she said, "comes to these ruins once every month. Not far from this place is a hall. There he usually feasts with many companions. I have often overheard them there. They then tell each other their shameful deeds. Perhaps you will then utter the magic word that you have forgotten." "Oh, dearest princess," cried the caliph, "tell me when you will come and where is the hall?" The owl was silent for a moment and then said, "Don't take it amiss, but I can only grant your wish on one condition." say it," cried Hasset insistently. "I have every right, namely, I would like to be free at the same time. But this can only happen if one of you offers me his hand." The storks seemed somewhat taken aback by the proposal, and the caliph motioned to his servant to go out with him. The grand vizier spoke to the caliph at the door, quote, "This is a foolish bargain, but you could take her." So he replied that my wife would scratch out my eyes when I got home. "Besides, I am an old man and you are still young and unmarried, and could you give your hand to a young, beautiful princess?" Quote, "That's just it," sighed the caliph, sadly letting his wings droop. "Who says she is young and beautiful? That's like buying a pig in a poke." Quote, they talked to each other for a long time. Finally, when the caliph saw that his vizier would rather remain fixed than marry the owl, he decided to fulfill the condition himself. The owl was delighted. She confessed to them that they could not have come at a better time, because the magicians would probably gather that night. She left the chamber with the storks to lead them into each hall. She walked for a long time into a dark corridor. Finally, a bright light shone down on them from a half-ruined wall. When they arrived there, the owl warned them to keep quiet. From the gap where they were standing, they could see a large hall. It was decorated all around with columns and magnificently ornamented. Many colored lamps replaced the light of day. In the middle of the hall stood a round table with many choice dishes. Around the table was a sofa on which sat 8 men. In one of these men, the storks recognized that the merchant who had sold them the magic powder was back. His neighbor asked him to tell them his latest deeds. Among other things, he also told the story of the caliph and his vizier. "What word have you given them?" another magician asked him. "A rather difficult Latin one, it is mutabor." When the storks at the gap in the wall heard this, they were beside themselves with joy. They ran so fast on their long legs towards the gate of the ruin that the owl could hardly follow. There the caliph spoke to the owl, moved. Savior of my life and the life of my friend, accept me as your husband as an eternal thank you for what you have done for us. Then he turned to the east. Three times the storks bent their long necks towards the sun, which was just rising from behind the mountains. Mutabor! They cried, in an instant they were transformed, and in the great joy of their newly given life, master and servant lay laughing and weeping in each other's arms. Who can describe their astonishment when they looked around? A beautiful lady, magnificently adorned, stood before them. Smiling, she shook hands with the caliph. Do you no longer remember your night owl? She said. It was she. The caliph was enchanted by her beauty and grace. The three of them now marched together towards Baghdad. The caliph found in his clothes not only the box of magic powder but also his purse. He therefore bought in the next village what he needed for their journey, and so they soon arrived at the gates of Baghdad. There, however, the arrival of the caliph caused great astonishment. He had been passed off as dead, and the people were therefore overjoyed to have their beloved ruler back. But their hatred against the deceiver Masra was all the more inflamed. They entered the palace and captured the old magician and his son. The caliph sent the old man to the same room in the ruins that the princess had occupied as an owl and had him hanged there. But the son, who understood nothing of his father's arts, was given the choice of dying or taking a snuff. When he chose the latter, the grand vizier offered him the box. A good a pinch and the caliph's magic word transformed him into a stork. The caliph had him locked in an iron cage and placed in his garden. Caliph Rasid lived a long and happy life with his wife, the princess. His happiest hours were always those when the grand vizier visited him in the afternoons. They often talked about their stork adventures, and when the caliph was in a cheerful mood, he would deign to hug the grand vizier to make him look like a stork. He would then climb up and down the room with stiff feet in earnest, clattering and waving his arms as if they were wings and showing how the latter had leaned in vain towards the east and called out, "Mew." This performance was always a great joy for the caliph's wife and her children. But if the caliph clattered and nodded and shouted, "Mew," for too long, then the vizier would threaten him with a smile. He would tell the caliph what had been discussed outside the door of the princess night owl. Next,